sad story. Gee whiz, I hate to hear such terrible stories of complete humiliation. Nothing is worse than to see a fellow human being completely humiliated. I mean, you know, that's terrible. Oh, you know, that's so sad. I wonder if there's any old line readers of the Village Voice listening tonight. I'm talking about readers who read the Voice back in its very exciting formative days. There may be a few still listening. But back in the early days of the Voice, all kinds of great, wild, interesting stuff appeared. You know, it was a very curious development that paper was at the time. And I used to write regularly for the Voice, along with a lot of other people. And I remember writing a piece in The Voice, one of the columns I did back in the days when The Voice was still, nobody really knew much about it. It was, in fact, in those days, the Village Voice was being given away. We used to go out on the nights when The Voice, we'd get The Voice from the printing press, and a few of guys who were involved with The Voice, and there weren't many at that time, but we used to go out and actually put The Voice in cars that were parked down around Sheridan Square. See, like you throw them away, you know, like you just stick them in windows of cars, like the shopping news or something, see, so people would read it. Well, I wrote a piece back in those days of about predicting in the piece. It was really just a mood piece, but predicting that ultimately the country, America, would discover, because I felt very strongly about it, and I still do. Now, of course, now that it's come to pass, you're going to find a lot of people just not even admitting they never followed it. But this was a long time ago. This was back in the heyday, even before the Beatles made it. You know, this was back in the heyday of, it was back in, so far back that Nat Hentoff was still listening to Teddy Wilson. You know, it's the truth. I'm not exaggerating. I mean, it was back in the days when guys like Hentoff were still writing about jazz, and I predicted in a piece in the Voice. The reason I'm mentioning this is that somebody clipped out of an old Village Voice this ancient yellowed clipping of this column and sent it to me a couple of days ago, and I had even forgotten that I had written this thing. And it was a piece predicting that ultimately the really hip people in the country would discover with a fantastic vengeance American country western music. Now, that column, I remember now, it all came back to me, that column was greeted with a great blank void because in those days, everybody I knew who considered himself totally with it would not have been found dead with country western music and the idea of, oh, you know, this is just completely something, the Bible Belt and all the rest of it, and you didn't listen to this stuff, no way. Well, I predicted that, and I mentioned some performers in this piece that people would discover ultimately. And who are some of those performers? Are you curious who some of them were that I mentioned in the piece? Buck Owens, among others. At that time, Buck Owens was just a guy that was working bad bars around places like Rabbit Hash, Kentucky. See? And well, now, the reason, I guess, I'm not trying to pretend that I had any omniscience or anything like that, although it is true that I did in this case. It was because I believed at the time, and I still do believe, that the rising tide of nationalism, which is very definitely part of our country today, you can call it what you want. You can call it isolationism. You can call it let's repair our own fencesism. You can call it many, many things, would ultimately result in the discovery of all things American, not European oriented, but American. See, and I knew that country western music at the time, and I came out of that tradition. By the way, this is for those of you who are curious about the Jew's harp. It's a difficult instrument, and I keep saying that to you, and people keep writing letters again saying, no, it isn't difficult. If he can only learn how to put it right against his teeth, he could learn it and all that. This is not true. And I used to play, from the time I was a kid, I played in country western groups, playing the jew's harp as a pro, and singing country western and playing the bass. And I worked in a lot of country western groups. And I knew that the fantastic vitality of this music, and I also knew that the basic honesty of it would ultimately cut through the commercial professional music that was the big thing of the day. It's hard to believe at that time people like Al Martino were the biggest thing, since, you know, the bottle beer, Chubby Checkers, people like great talents like Eddie Fisher. This is what people really thought was fantastic performing. It was a pure nightclub professional thing, and it was a very different kind of milieu that they worked in. I'm not putting those guys down, but they were pure pro showbiz, whereas the country western guys really were one with their audience. It's very difficult to explain that to somebody who hasn't experienced it. So I wrote this piece, and I remember talking to a couple of guys in the Village Voice office at the time, among them Hentoff, who were absolutely scornful of it. This is ridiculous. You mean to tell me? He predicted, in fact, a lot of predicted, that ultimately, as we get more and more civilized in our country, that this stuff would disappear because it's so basically bad news. Well, they've all forgotten saying those things, naturally, and now they're on the bandwagon and writing as if they, for years, have been listening to Buck Owens and Merle Haggard and all the rest of it. And I also wrote a companion piece about that, if I may say this. I don't often talk about stuff I've written in the past, but I wrote... See, I think that when you write something, or you perform something, or you say something, if it is said well before its time, it will be lost completely. Nobody's... Because the people who hear you think, well, this guy's just talking. It's just... It's called... He's a nut, some kind of nut. This is just gibberish. If you say something just before the public discovers it, like, say, 2 days, you will be called a genius. If you're too early, you'll be called some kind of nut. And I've been going around saying for a long time that country western music would not only be a big thing, but would be the biggest thing in the pop field of music in America within a few short years. Well, it's, here it is. It's a fact now. And I even see guys driving around who just a couple of years ago were obviously going to the Stones concerts, and just a couple of years ago were totally in love with the Beatles, are now driving around with bumper stickers that say Chet Atkins for God, that kind of stuff, which is kind of silly, which shows again that it's being subverted, which it will ultimately be. But nevertheless, there was a companion piece. Is this interesting to you guys? There was a companion piece that I wrote the next week in The Voice that was about something which is slowly coming to pass, too. It's not as evident to many people, but it is becoming a big thing. I predicted eventually that the cities would become so, that is, particularly New York, would become so alienated from the rest of the country, both philosophically and artistically, that ultimately people within New York would be listening to radios driving out at night on the New Jersey Turnpike and hearing radio stations all over the country, and they would be hearing a population. They would be hearing things. They would be hearing a civilization, literally, which is totally alien to theirs, and they would be listening to it almost the same way they listen to a foreign country. That a kid who's grown up entirely in the Bronx listening to a radio station from Austin, Texas, is roughly about like, being Swiss listening to an Indonesian radio station. It's a completely different ball of wax. They do not come from the Zero Mostel Fiddler on the Roof tradition. No way. It's a whole different thing. Well, that's really come to pass. And you know that one of the biggest new developments in the field of electronics recently has been the sudden upsurge of radio sets with a very hot front end that can pick distant broadcasts up for years, radio sets back in the 50s and 60s were made purely just to get the local station. That's all. Radio was called news. It was called music and temperature. That's it. And all you had to do was get the local station. You heard the, you know, whatever the rock was that was on at the time, and you got the news, and that was all radio was for. But now there's a whole group of people who are discovering radio as a basic form of communication. And they're listening to out-of-town stations all over the country, which are suddenly getting great listening audiences in New York. That's fascinating. Used to be the other way around. Used to be that the out-of-town guys, say guys living in Nashville or Atlanta, would spend all their time trying to pull in New York, because New York had all, but, you know, this is what they wanted to try to hear. But now it's the other way around. Guys are sitting there listening to Nashville, and they're sitting in their pads over in the village with a, you know, where they got an antenna up on the roof, and they're trying to pull in Atlanta, and they're trying to pull in Waco, Texas and stuff. Because this is where the real thing is going on. They're only getting the second-rate thing here in New York. It's very interesting. I predicted that in the Village Voice. And the hottest thing today in TV and radio sales is the radio set that can get, has a hot front end, can pick up distant stations, as well as shortwave bands. This is transcending the old idea of getting a set that just had AM, FM. Now the whole idea is to be able to, say, listen for 2 or 3 hours at night to Radio Jakarta. Listen for a half an hour every night to hear what the BBC is saying, the BBC News, which has traditionally been listened to all over the world by Englishmen and people in the provinces. So now we're catching up with that. Now we're beginning to see this. Very interesting development. And the other night, for example, see, I've always said that one thing that you get out of country western music, something you never got out of commercial music, and that includes mostly rock, too, is that the guys that are working in C&W generally reflect attitudes of people around them. In a curiously ingenuous way, they really will do this. So Merle Haggard singing "I'm an Okie from Muskogee," and then, well, I'm proud of it. This is a very common feeling in areas like that. So the piece of music made absolute sense to those people around there, and it does. And if you want to know something, I'm going to listen to these things. On the other hand, if you the commercial music. Really doesn't have much contact with the people that is being sung about, or even the milieu in which it's supposedly sung. For example, it's a very common thing in showbiz music, Tin Pan Alley, so-called, for two little guys from Fordham Road to sit down, "Hey, Manny, what are you saying when you write a song about the South? Let's see, how about this? Oh, Alabama pound, oh, I'm Alabama, Bammy." You know, nothing to do with the way it is in Alabama, whether people would ever go there that way, you know. And so it's a commercial thing. Now, I'll give you an example of that. I don't know why I'm doing this tonight. Now, for any of you who travel a great deal, you know that ideas are spoken through country western songs much clearer than the so-called folk songs. Folk songs are generally about lost loves. They're generally, which in a sense is what commercial music. That's why the people who came out of commercial music, you know, who were weaned from Eddie Fisher and the Beatles, were very commercial music, were the first thing they took up was the so-called folk song, which dealt with the same things. The folk song often deals about a lost love, the Barbara Allen. They're very romantic, and they deal with... with things which, in a sense, always have been dealt with in commercial music. Love, loneliness, and all the rest of it. They don't really speak of many. And the folk songs that did speak of the specific issues have long since disappeared in the library. Now, here's an example of a piece of music that really says what large parts of the country are feeling. Curious statement of philosophy. This is not just a piece of commercial music, because it says what a lot of people are really thinking. Years ago, this idea was not popular in the rest of the country. In fact, it was the reverse. But listen to this piece of music and see what I mean about this reflecting a large area of the country. So swing into it there. There you go, Al. This, by the way, is Buck Owens.
It ain't nothing but a concrete jungle with people packed like sardines, where everybody's trying to live beyond their means, where all the natives hurry and scurry to and fro, and like fleas on a puppy dog, they got no place to go. I wouldn't live in New York City if they gave me the whole dang town. Talk about a bummer, it's the biggest one around. Sodom and Gomorrah was tamed to what I found. I wouldn't live in New York City if they gave me the whole dang town. Well, I ain't seen the sunshine since the day that I arrived, 'cause brother, I've been busy trying to survive. Nobody knows you've been here till you're 6 feet underground. Then you become a statistic if they remember to write you down. I wouldn't live in New York City if they gave me the whole dang town. Talk about a bummer, it's the biggest one around. Sodom and Gomorrah has tamed what I found. I wouldn't live in New York City if they gave me the whole dang town.
Now, of course, that ain't going to be a popular sentiment here. But all I'm doing is playing this to show you that this is a real statement of an actual thing. It has nothing to do with love, beauty, truth. It has nothing to do with a lost youth. It just simply says what a lot of people think. And now there's an example of the curious vitality of this music. Now, vitality does not necessarily mean you like it. In fact, it's probably... I know tomorrow morning I'm going to get 50 letters. Dear Shepherd, what do you mean by foisting off that ridiculous illiterate... and so on down the line. Therefore, again, missing the point of what we're trying to say. That this is a form of music which has a very definite, distinct ring of saying what is around at the time that it is around. Now, of course, there's a large body of C&W music which deals with the usual things, with love and so forth. But, for example, I know of no body of music that is in the popular idiom that deals as strongly with alcoholism as, say, country western music. Because you know that there's a lot of country western songs that are about alcoholism and the problem of becoming an alcoholic? Did you know that? You'll not find much of this in rock. And yet, even though it's a fantastic problem, you won't find much of this in certainly you'll not find any of it in pop music. Very few references even made to it. And yet, in C&W music, they recognize this as a fact. Bars are a great part of the C&W world. Making it is another one, too. I'm just very, very interested in a lot of the changes that are going on where people are suddenly discovering, in a sense, a real sense, their own heritage. Now, you live in New York. A lot of people tend to think that isn't their heritage. Well, that's questionable. that New York, and certainly New York, is as much part of the country as Austin, Texas, and it's a heritage which many kids don't have the same chauvinism about New York that older people have. That's the holdover from the LaGuardia period, where people used to think that New York was the greatest thing since bottled beer or sliced bread. But many kids today are seeing the rest of the country through very different eyes, which is very healthy, I think. It's suddenly realizing this is a big country, and there are many things going on in the country which are not necessarily antithetical to your tastes. They're just merely very different. And it's fascinating, though, to see the development. To me, it's personally very gratifying, too, because I've always felt that C&W music was one of the great neglected parts of our cultural background and heritage. But nevertheless, I do feel strongly that there are great rediscovery. In fact, I think that a lot of kids today, a lot of people today, would much prefer spending a vacation, let's say, driving through New Mexico, Arizona, and Kansas than they would, say, to take a vacation in the French Riviera, which is an earlier generation's attitude of a great vacation. Do you buy that, Al? That's a whole new viewpoint. A lot of people used to take vacations to places like that because they couldn't go anywhere else. But with an affluent society, you have choices. You know, talking about the country western types, some of the shows I used to work a lot with these guys. In fact, one of the first live shows I did when I was still a teenager on TV and radio at the time was to do a show. I did a show that was was sponsored by Purina Chick Chow, and it the whole idea of it was teenage C&W types. It was a teenage C&W show. I really got into this thing, and I played the Jews harp in the group, and I also sang, and I also played the bass. And almost everybody who plays C&W music, I'm talking about it from the performing standpoint, plays several instruments. Very few of them are single instrument types. And it's quite common to find a C&W performer who can play the piano, who can play the guitar, who can play a good Jew's harp, who can play the banjo, who can do it all, because it's the kind of performing that demands that. Every little group, three or four guys would do the singing. You know, they'd sing each, they'd each have their own things they did, and then the other guys would play backup to them. So everybody had to be really flexible. There was no way of saying, well, no, I just play the piano. No way. So you take guys like Jerry Lee Lewis, who, by the way, comes out of C&W. He plays practically everything. Wayne Newton, who was originally a C&W singer and a good one, but particularly a fantastic banjo player, plays banjo, plays guitar, plays piano, anything that's around, they play. Because from the very time you're a kid, you're playing these things. Very few of them take really legitimate lessons in these things, and it's all endemic to the atmosphere. Some of the guys that I worked with doing shows. Oh, people like Ferlin Husky, Hank Penny, Hank Snow, the late Cowboy Copas, Grandpa Jones. By the way, Grandpa Jones was always using the term Grandpa Jones. That was his act. That didn't make him an old man. It was an act. And he would always come out and do Grandpa Jones. Even when he was, in many cases, younger than the people in the audience. But it was an act. and it became so successful that he was always known then as Grandpa Jones. People like Hank Penny, Merle Travis. I remember Merle Travis. Almost all these guys wrote their own songs, a lot of them. And the reason they wrote songs, not only did they like to write songs, it was also part of their whole tradition, but it was cheaper, too. Because you didn't have to go out and buy sheet music for a song you wrote yourself. There was a very practical reason. So a lot of these guys would write their own songs because of economic reasons. And once in a while, one of them would get published and would go on to become a fantastic hit. Like, I remember Merle Travis. Do you remember Cigarettes and Whiskey and Wild, Wild Women Will Make the will Be the Death of You Yet? Cigarettes and Whiskey and Wild, Wild Women. Well, this was Merle Travis. And, of course, a lot of the stuff that they sing confused city listeners because they thought they were serious. See, one thing you got to understand about country, much of country humor, is it's absolutely deadpan. So when a guy would get up and sing with an absolutely dead look on his face, I mean, not only deadpan look, almost a pained look, and he would sing, and sing it in this biblical voice, cigarettes and whiskey and wild, wild women will be the death of me yet. Well, to the outside observer, he would hear this. He'd say, well, now you see, that shows how straight-laced these people are. Listen, he's against cigarettes and whiskey and wild, wild women. Whereas actually the audience recognizes that that was the one thing in his life he was for. But he was also stating a fundamental truth. It would be the death of him yet, as it often was. And the wreck on the highway, you know, it's a field that if you haven't really spent much time listening to good C&W, and there is good and bad, that's the unfortunate fact of it, and unfortunately most of the people first catch on to the commercial or the bad. So they will immediately latch on to, and I'm not saying these guys are bad, but these are the more obvious performers. They'll latch on immediately to Glenn Campbell. They'll latch on to Johnny Cash, people like this, who really... in a way, are the Eddie Fishers of that world. They're not... in no way are they the Merle Haggards, which is another ball game. Unrepentant Merle Haggard, who is by way of being a curious country-type genius in his own field. But all of these things, it's fascinating to me. Well, do you recall a radio station? Yes, I see, Jerry. A radio station across the river here. I know, I see it. A radio station across the river tried it a few years ago, C&W, and they failed miserably. Do you recall the station it was? Well, now they're doing quite well with it. See, the timing of an idea is important. And yeah, bring it up there. By the way. Yeah, well, of course, that there's several types. Some night, what I ought to do some night is to do a show based on country comic acts. Yeah, now most of you know the country western singers these days, and you know, ranging all the way from Tom T. Hall through Kris Kristofferson through Merle Haggard, which is the alpha to the omega, actually. But very few of you know anything about String Bean, classic comic act of the folk. Not really folk. You shouldn't call it that. The C&W circuit. They don't like to be called folk, you know, because they're not. These are not the unspoiled folk who sat around and played mandolins. That's another ball game back in the hills. I think there's a great deal of confusion among writers today about what C&W really basically is. It's basically city people, you know. That surprises you, doesn't it? Oh, yeah. I mean, the C&W bars, Nashville is not a small town, friend. Oh, no way. If you think that's a country town, you ain't been there. It's music that comes out of Nashville. It comes out of South Chicago. It comes out of places like Louisville. It comes out of places like Detroit and St. Louis. It comes out of places like Atlanta. Places like New Orleans. All those places. And most of the guys that sing it and play it are involved very much in the technological world, you know, the truck drivers, and all the rest of it. So I ought to do a thing some night on Minnie Pearl, String Bean, and the country western comedy acts.